Linger.
Jan Švejnar is one of the most respected economists the Czech Republic has produced. An advisor to former President Václav Havel, Mr. Švejnar is a professor at the University of Michigan's Business School. He also heads an American-style PhD program and research center at Prague's Charles University. I caught up with the economist recently in Prague, both to discuss the present and past events, including how Jan Švejnar left Czechoslovakia 2 years after the Russian-led invasion of 1968. He was just 17 at the time, just shy of his high school diploma.
That's actually a very interesting story. I left just before the final high school exams. I smuggled all my transcripts. I was a pretty good student, so I applied to a number of European universities to see if I could enroll. They all responded saying, "We fully understand, but there is nothing we can do without the high school diploma. We cannot enroll you." So I tried the U.S. universities. I ran into three professors, actually, at the time. One was from Duke University, one was from Cornell, and one was from Michigan State University. And they wrote letters of recommendation for me. And Duke and Cornell responded and said, "Why don't you come as a special student for a year? If you can handle the material, then we'll transfer you into a regular student program." So I decided to go to Cornell, and that August I had my suitcase, my guitar, my skis, and I was heading to New York City and then to upstate New York.
You took your skis with you?
Yeah, I was actually an avid skier, and back here in Czechoslovakia, I was on a junior team that we went racing every weekend in the Giant Mountains or some other mountains here in Czech Republic, even Slovakia, actually. So I was hoping to continue. And as it turned out, it was very fortunate because I made the Cornell ski team. And so that gave me immediately a group of close friends with whom we spent weekends going to upstate New York and Vermont. So it was fortuitous and it was good.
And what area of economics grabbed your attention?
So it's interesting. By coincidence, I was admitted by a special school at Cornell called the School of Industrial and Labor Relations, a school that dealt a lot with labor economics, labor issues, and so on. So my first love in economics, my first field that I started working on were issues relating to labor, standpoint of the firm, the enterprise, the corporation, and how workers and management interacted, which is industrial and labor relations as a field. I started being interested very soon also in comparative studies, economic development, the poor countries, and there one often finds still very important unions. Well, in Europe, if you think of Germany, mm-hmm. you still have majority of the labor force being unionized and so on.
What were some decisions that you were able to witness, take part in pre-1989 that had mm-hmm. a profound effect?
I started working with the World Bank quite a lot and some other international financial institutions and organizations such as the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, in developing countries, where I and the teams that I usually work with had the opportunity to advise governments, non-profit institutions as well as private sector, but primarily governments in terms of policy. So we were able, for instance, in the French-speaking African countries such as Senegal to help alter the labor code in order to make the economy more flexible and be able to increase hiring of workers and expansion of firms in terms of output, but of course employment. So those would be things. I started working also in the 1980s quite a lot in Yugoslavia, the country that one could work in, get information, get data, carry out analyses, and the Yugoslav government was very much interested at that point in how to spur economic growth. And so I could start learning about how a quasi-communist system, firms, workers, and government policies essentially interact. So that helped me also after, of course, the fall of the Berlin Wall to be able to be helpful in the context of the transition economies.
You were 37 when
yes.
the Berlin Wall fell. Mm-hmm. How were you struck by the events, first as a Czech and second as an economist?
And both were striking. I did not think that in my lifetime communism would necessarily be overthrown. Some people were predicting it for decades, but predictions that are decades old are not very useful. You need to know whether it's going to happen next year or year after, something like that. So that was, of course, a phenomenal change. As an economist, it was an incredible opportunity to learn about changes in system and, in fact, to influence the outcome and between November and the end of December, I wrote a blueprint for economic transformation of Czechoslovakia, which I then brought here in January and circulated widely and talked to the government officials about it. And so in various ways, it then had impact on the transformation here and in some of the other economies as well.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the points that you stressed?
Well, I stressed an overall point that one needed to really prepare very well the ground on which one builds. So I was stressing the importance to prepare a legal and institutional framework which would be compatible, enabling, and consistent with for market economy. So my argument, which at that point seemed paradoxical, was hold the system for a moment, prepare the new ground, and then go quickly with a set of well-defined, coordinated, and highly complementary reforms so that you change the economy quickly, but already within a legal and institutional framework that can support it. I had a fear that if you just introduce a half-breed, half-system, that one will be worse off, actually, than being at either extreme. In that strategy paper, I named and described all sets of reforms that needed to be carried out, from liberalizing prices, carrying out privatization, arguing for macroeconomic stabilization. I was arguing that creation of trade unions was necessary and desirable, but I was also arguing that they should be company-specific bargaining, as one sees, for instance, in the United States and Canada, rather than industry-wide. I was worried, and I think correctly, that the weaker firms might not survive if there was just a single wage introduced across the entire industry. And yet we wanted to keep maximum employment because that was one of the problems as it emerged subsequently, was high unemployment rate in virtually all these economies.
You were in the end quite critical, or still critical, of the judicial system. That's something which in fact remains a problem to this day.
Exactly. So my unhappiness stems from the fact that in fact the government, I think, underestimated, or many people consciously did not want to create a very strong legal system and enforcement. Then there was a very rapid privatization, which I thought was fine, although I was against the majority stakes as they were given, because corporate governance then suffered companies. There was no sort of, for a while, strong shareholders who would really determine where the companies were going. And that's what led, together with the weak legal system, to the looting, to the tunneling, as it was called, where managers, workers, or groups of individuals could essentially siphon off either profits or assets of the firms. And it made sense for them because they didn't own the firm as a whole, or they owned it in such a way that they worried that somebody else might actually take it from them. And so it was preferable for them to get quick money by looting rather than restructuring and creating value in the medium and long run.
There are still outstanding issues, notably healthcare, pension reform, the education system. Right. Do you think that whichever government comes to power after elections next year, do you think that this government will finally have the means and the political will to do something about those last steps?
That's a good question. I'm not absolutely sure about it because elections will come out. I think that there is a window opportunity in the sense that the new government, right after the elections, can take some important steps. It's a question of political will and constellation of political power. If we have a situation such as in Germany right now, where there is almost a balance or impasse in terms of the political outcome, then it's much harder to carry out strong reforms. But I think all the politicians now are acutely aware that there is a pension issue. The system is essentially too expensive and not means tested, doesn't address the real problems of people who need some assistance. Similarly with the healthcare, it's a system which is very broad, very inefficient. People waste healthcare resources and so on. Again, it doesn't help in the acute way to those who really need major surgeries and so on and so forth, at least not as efficiently as it could. So I think there is an awareness that changes need to be made. And so that's really the big challenge that needs to be addressed.
Jan Wellinger's guest today was economist Jan Schwena. Our time's up. I'm Dieter Asidu. Join us again next time.